Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. Give the active people in your life something they'll truly appreciate. Performance apparel from Vuori. Whether they're into running, surfing, hiking, or even just casual walks around the block, there's something for everyone. And if you're not sure what to gift them, you can't go wrong with something from Vuori's Dream Knit collection. It's the perfect gift and so comfortable. Get 20% off your first purchase today at Vuori. Vuori.com/Spotify.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Tis the season for graduation, pomp, circumstance, and that age-old tradition of graduates standing together one final time to mark their collective achievement. On campuses across the country, there are also separate commencements for Black students, for LGBT students, Latino students. Supporters say these ceremonies recognize their unique experiences on campus. But what about college as a melting pot of inclusion? We did this all together. This hour on Point, a big rethink of the college commencement ceremony. You can join us on air or online. Have you participated in a Black commencement, a Lavendar or Raza one? How did it impact you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me this hour in the studio is Kristen Turner, student organizer of Black Commencement 2017 at Harvard University. This is the first year Harvard is holding one university-wide. She's set to graduate this month from Harvard Law School and is president of the Black Law Students Association. Welcome, Kristen. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Also joining me in the studio, Courtney Woods. She's an organizer of Black Commencement, also 2017 at Harvard. She will graduate with a master's degree this month from Harvard's Graduate School of Education. Courtney, welcome to you.
Hello, thank you.
And also in the studio, Sarah Jackson, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Northeastern University. Her research focuses on race and social movements. Sarah, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you all got a lot of attention, Kristen and Courtney, when you announced you were going to hold your own graduation ceremony at Harvard. What's the purpose of Black Commencement?
Well, I'll take that. The purpose that we at least came to on our end was more so thinking about ways to commemorate the Black graduating students while also kind of creating an addendum ceremony to the regular and traditional commencement exercises through the university.
So this is an addendum, not a substitute, no diplomas here.
Exactly, that's correct.
So 2 days before the university's official commencement, was it sanctioned by the school, Kristen?
100%, yes. It was actually very much so supported by the administration from all the different university schools.
And give us a sense of who's participating in this commencement and what are their backgrounds?
In terms of the students or in terms of the administrators?
Students.
In terms of the students, you have a wide range. You have the law students, business students, medical students, the education school, the Kennedy School of Government. Anybody I'm forgetting?
The public health school, the divinity school,
exactly.
The school of design, the school of dental medicine.
So
across the
university. It runs the gamut, exactly.
And so how is Black commencement different from an actual graduation ceremony?
Well, I think it was more so in terms of the birthing of it. It was more so student-run, student-hands-on in terms of how we conceptualized of what we wanted to do and the different elements that we wanted to incorporate. So you'll see everything from, cultural kind of attaches, from, Kente Stolling to student speakers to more so kind of reflect and represent, kind of pieces from this year, but also larger kind of climate conversations about the Black experience at Harvard.
So, Courtney Woods, why did you see a need for a separate commencement ceremony for Black students?
Well, it was important to us to have this additional commencement ceremony. I wouldn't call it separate, but I would say a complimentary or additional ceremony, not only to honor Black students, but Black families, to be in a safe space where we all share a collective identity and a shared history, and not only to honor those who will be present and walking across the stage that day, but also our ancestors.
And Kristen, this is the first Black commencement at Harvard.
It's the first university-wide commencement. So the undergraduates have actually been participating in a very similar exercise, and it actually is very similar to ceremonies that we had actually taken part in as undergrads. And so now we wanted one that represented both the undergrads and the graduate student population.
So you did participate in Black commencement at other universities as undergraduate. Why were those experiences valuable, Kristen?
Oh, most definitely. I think that to Courtney's point, it touched on more so of a legacy, the broader Black identity, the diaspora, et cetera, and also incorporating family members who also contributed to, you know, the villages that kind of helped us achieve our accomplishments.
Courtney, you know what the critics say. You know, there are ceremonies like these around the country at Stanford, at Columbia, Temple University. Critics say they are divisive. They are discriminatory. You even hear reverse racism, right? What's your response to that?
I would definitely say this is not about segregation. This is about celebration. This is about celebrating the unique identities that fall within the Black diaspora. This is about students who have unique and particular challenges at these institutions and about celebrating them and honoring those unique challenges.
What's been the reaction you've heard, Kristen?
Nothing but great things from both students and administrators. I think that it was something that more so filled a need, and it's something that everybody's really excited to see because it really is the manifestation of a lot of different stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. Professor Jackson, jump in here. What was your initial reaction when you heard that Black graduate students organizing this first university-wide Black commencement?
Honestly, I mean, my reaction was I was surprised that it wasn't something that already existed at Harvard because it's just so common in so many different types of higher education institutions to have these sort of celebratory things for students from particular identity groups and not even necessarily always organized around social identity groups, but even sometimes, for example, fraternities and sororities have their own graduation celebrations, members of particular other types of student groups, service groups, et cetera, have their own graduation celebrations. So it's actually so common that I was sort of surprised that it didn't already exist at Harvard.
And it's not just Black commencement services or ceremonies. I mean, I'm reading here Asian students, mm-hmm. Latino students, mm-hmm. LGBT students, mm-hmm. Native Americans, first-generation graduates.
Absolutely.
Plenty of other different groups that come together to celebrate.
Absolutely. And I mean, this comes out of an acknowledgement from, of course, decades and decades of research in, you know, educational achievement research, achievement in sociology and psychology about what makes a successful student. Part of, and you mentioned sort of the idea that colleges should be a melting pot, this sort of idealistic idea earlier, but part of what all the research tells us about that is if we actually want different types of students from different backgrounds to succeed in colleges, they need to have a feeling of community, a sense of community, a sense of belonging, and they need to see their identities validated in those spaces. And as a result, you know, like I said, for many, not just the recent decade, but many decades since the Civil Rights Movement, you have had different groups of students having these different spaces, different celebrations, different conversations, sometimes their own publications on university campuses. And this is all very normal for, you know, anyone who's gone through higher education in the last 30 years, really.
What about, Professor, this idea that you come to college to have a collective mm-hmm. experience, right, mm-hmm. to learn from each other, and that this in some way fractures that idea of inclusion?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the problems with that critique is it presumes that it's not possible to both be having that experience where you're sharing ideas, where you're in a melting pot, where you're debating people who look different than you and think different than you, and also hold on to sort of the things that are important to you about your culture, right? And that's something that I think in our broader politics often is a faulty logic that gets made. It's of course possible for students of every different kind to be in conversation with one another, to be building relationships with one another, to be building really important networks with one another that they both use as part of their educational experiences and afterwards in their professional lives, and to still hold on to, you know, the unique experiences they have based around their identities, whether that is that they're first-generation college students, that they're first-generation Americans, that they have specific, you know, experiences around their gender, sexuality, or whatever. That doesn't take away, and acknowledging that doesn't take away from the fact that they still, of course, are part of the larger community.
Courtney Woods, you will be one of the featured speakers at Black Commencement at Harvard this year. What do you plan to talk about?
Well, I'm going to talk about what it feels like to be a Harvard student in a very hyper-competitive environment, and what it means to fail, and what it means to face fear, and to overcome failure and fear in a predominantly white institution as a Black student. and what the call to service is for Black students who are graduating from Harvard when we leave here.
So tell me about yourself. You say that, and I want to know more about you.
Well, what can I tell you? I graduated from Michigan State University in 2015. I came to Harvard as a fellow with the Center for Public Interest Careers. So I was serving undergraduates at the college, assisting them in finding summer internships and postgraduate fellowships.
And growing up?
I'm from the state of Michigan, so my father's a Jamaican immigrant. I'm from the suburbs in the metro Detroit area. And moving to Boston was the first time I actually moved out of my home state.
Mm. And first to go to college in your family, let
yes.
alone to earn a graduate degree.
Exactly.
You told our producer that you feel like you are anchoring entire communities back home. Tell me about that.
And many of us do. Many of the students who I talk to who are going to participate in the Black Commencement do. You know, it's no secret. There's many facts and figures that show that Black students are disproportionately earning degrees as compared to other races. And I think that, you know, my story is very similar to other students' stories. It's definitely not unique. And every day I get calls or emails or texts from people back home saying, you know, I never thought I could go to college, let alone Harvard. The fact that you made it and that I know you and that I know you personally and I can identify with you and I see you doing all these great things means that I can too.
You're nodding your head, Professor Jackson.
Well, yes. I mean, I think this speaks very much to what we're talking about, the unique experiences that some of these students have and why they feel that it's important to acknowledge these. I mean, even as Kristen was talking about, having a space where the families can acknowledge, you know, traditional graduations at universities, often there's a limited number of tickets. But often people like Courtney, for example, who come from communities where they're an anchor and they have these really big families, they have cousins and aunties and uncles and all sorts of people that want a space where they can celebrate them. And often that celebration is a cultural celebration. It's a success story about celebrating the person that is doing something as the first person in their family or who has accomplished something that other people want to follow their lead. And to have a space where that family can come and celebrate that, I mean, that's a lovely, lovely thing, right? And that sort of is very reflective of this uniqueness of this experience that the graduation is being organized around.
Kristen Turner, you talk about a celebration here. I mean, many students will wear a kente cloth, right, to sort of represent their African heritage.
Their stoles, correct. Yes,
mm-hmm.
they will.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope to accomplish by hosting this? I mean, what do you want to see this year?
So I think for me, especially to Courtney's point, is that, you know, being a Black student at Harvard, the climate is just so interesting. You know, you're pretty much at the pinnacle of privilege. And I think for a lot of people, that kind of triggers a sense of like the schizophrenia that comes along with living Black excellence. And so to be able to incorporate your family members, but also, you know, represent somebody who exists in a very organic way in that middle ground, I think that's really the messaging that we're trying to shoot for.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. You're listening to Yale University, hosting a graduation event for Black seniors. The ceremony opened with performances from drummers and dancers. We're talking about why mixed-race colleges are having Black-only, LGBT-only, Latino-only graduation commencements. What about one inclusive commencement for everyone? Do we really need separate ceremonies? We're speaking this hour with Kristen Turner and Courtney Woods, two of the graduate student organizers of the Black Commencement 2017 at Harvard University. We're also joined by Professor Sarah Jackson, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Northeastern University. I want to play some sound here. This is from Virginia Tech. A kente cloth ceremony last week where Vice President for Student Affairs Dr. Patty Perillo spoke to the students.
May you always remember from whence you came, and may you continue to rise. And may you know that you are Black and beautiful and bold and brilliant, and your lives matter. Go out and make the world a better place. I am, we are counting on you. Rise, rise, rise. Congratulations, graduates.
And here are attendees singing the Black American National Anthem at last year's Black graduation ceremony at Grand Valley State University in Michigan.
Let every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the heart.
Ema now, calling from Westfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Ema. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Pleasure to be on.
Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I this is just a fascinating conversation. I attended Columbia University for my undergraduate degree, and then I went to Yale University for my master's and PhD, and I'm now I'm a professor at another school at Westfield State University. And at both Yale and Columbia, we had Black graduation, and that was a very rich part of the completion of your process there that Black students need to look forward to. I have to say, it was never seen, at least not in the circles that I was in, as divisive in any way. It was always seen as an acknowledgement of something somehow, because when you're a student there as a Black student in these very, very, very predominantly white institutions, a big part of your experience is realizing that there are very few of you there, and that the few of you that are there end up in many ways representing what Blackness is, Black greatness, Black excellence is at that school and beyond. And so you never feel like you are there just by yourself. You feel like somehow you are carrying all of the echoes of everyone who can't come to a school like this or who has not been able to experience this. And so when you graduate together collectively, it's like a shout that you do together, along with the singing of the Black National Anthem and so on and so forth. So it's always been acknowledgement. And I actually performed a song at the one at Yale when I graduated from there. And it's never divisive. I've never experienced any kind of angst from white students there as a result of this happening. At least it was never verbalized.
I so appreciate that call, Ema. Thank you very much from Westfield, Massachusetts. Everyone in the room is nodding their heads at this one. Professor?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a couple important things that, you know, that reflects, and also that the speech that you played the little bit from reflects as well, where there's this sense of community or communal responsibility and representation and success that often students from underrepresented groups carry on their shoulders throughout college. So,
in fact, you cite sociological reasons, actually, why Black students would want to have a separate commencement ceremony. Talk about that a little bit, Professor Jackson.
Well, I mean, you could come to it from a few different angles, right? I mean, there's plenty of research in education and sociology and psychology that sort of shows, of course, while in contemporary society, universities like Harvard, like Yale, like Columbia are integrated, integration doesn't necessarily equal inclusivity. And what I mean by that is just because we no longer have a separate but equal doctrine in America doesn't mean that students who are vastly underrepresented in terms of numbers and who are members of groups who historically have been marginalized and denigrated don't continue to experience forms of marginalization. And so often, because they are the only, for example, Black student in their class, or perhaps the only transgender student in their class, or perhaps a first-generation American, they experience things from within the institution, often not intentional, right? Or perhaps their professors or perhaps from their classmates that really can make them feel as if they don't belong. And that can be psychologically damaging. And that actually is one of the reasons where if you look at graduation rates, you see, for example, that Black students graduate at a lower rate than white students. And all of the sort of social science around that suggests that it's because of a lack of resources and social support in these institutions. And so the solution to that has always been, we need resources and social support so that these students can feel that they belong, so that they have spaces where they can work through those feelings of both being responsible for entire communities and being treated as representatives of their groups, but also where they can sort of work through and speak to those sort of unique experiences that they're having.
Let's get Kathy in here from Medina, Ohio. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Hi, Jane. Thank you. I have a quick comment and a quick question. My comment is, I feel like as a white person, I've raised my kids to include everybody and not see color or gender or race as separate. We're all people. We're all humans. I feel like this perpetuates separate but equal, in fact. And my question is, if it's not okay to have an all-white graduation, why is it okay to have an all-Black graduation or an all-Latino graduation or an all-LGBT graduation? What is the difference there, and why does it make it okay?
I hear it, Kathy. Thank you very much. It's an important point to bring up. Professor Jackson?
Sure. I mean, and I want the students to speak to this as well from their perspective. But, you know, I think I'm actually really glad Kathy asked this question, because I think this both, again, speaks to sort of the way we sometimes conflate things in political discourse. But, of course, the answer to that is, one, this graduation ceremony isn't exclusive, right? It's not saying only Black people are allowed in the room, nor is it based on any type of ideology of supremacy, right? So it's not saying...
True, but you're calling it Black commencement.
Sure, sure, right. But this, the sort of history, right, of the United States is that all white... whatever, you know, restaurants, graduations, universities, whatever, were shaped and formed around ideologies of white supremacy, around the idea that whites were superior to other groups, right? And this, of course, is not making that claim. Rather, what it's saying is that there's a unique set of experiences that means that Black students need to sort of see their experiences validated and celebrated, right?
So, Kristen and Courtney, jump in here. I mean, Kathy's point is these kinds of ceremonies perpetuate this notion of separate but equal.
So, at least in my opinion, I think that that's a very good conversation to be having. I completely agree. But I think in the context that I've been in, oftentimes what happens is the student voices become muted by the larger kind of majoritarian discourse. And I think that in that vein, it's very difficult to find spaces where you can kind of carve out not only your voice but also your narrative.
So, do you feel like your voice was muted at Harvard?
I definitely think that maybe my voice wasn't muted, but the contextualizing narrative surrounding my circumstances, I had to do a lot more work to make that visible. And I think that it's psychologically understanding that that is a thing, and that is definitely a task that differentiates, say, you know, an underrepresented minority individual from a regular majority mm-hmm. student.
Courtney, jump in.
So a couple things. As an organizer, I want to definitely clarify that mm-hmm. this is not exclusively Black. This is not all Black. The professors and deans who will be stalling students are not all Black. The students who are walking, we have non-Black students who have said, I want to be part of this ceremony so that I can support my colleagues. And we have welcomed them.
I think what Kathy is saying, just the idea of mm-hmm. it creates this mm-hmm. notion that we're separate.
Yeah.
We're in
so
silence.
It's not a perfect analogy, but I'm going to make an analogy. So if you are having Thanksgiving dinner and you invite your Jewish neighbors who are kosher to Thanksgiving dinner, right? And they say, hey, well, we're kosher. We would love to be a part of this dinner. We're going to come over. We're going to do what we can and celebrate with you. But we're going to have to go home and have, you know, a separate dinner that respects mm-hmm. sort of our values and our culture because we're kosher, you would never say, oh, I'm so offended that my neighbors are still going to make the effort to come to my Thanksgiving but are also going to have their separate Thanksgiving. So I think we need to take this these narratives of inclusivity, right? And I really appreciate Kathy because she said, you know, I'm teaching my kids that we're all people and we're all human. But what we really need to do is acknowledge that humans are different, right? And they have different experiences. And part of that sometimes means they have different needs around how institutions can serve them, how cultural norms can serve them, how traditions can serve them. And that's sort of what these graduations reflect.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Lake Arrowhead, California. Ward Connerly, president of the American Civil Rights Institute, a national nonprofit organization that says it seeks to educate the public on the harms of racial and gender preferences. He's also a former University of California regent. Mr. Connerly, welcome to On Point. How nice to have you.
I'm glad to be with you.
You are African-American. You are a legendary leader, a visionary, really, in higher education. Do you support a separate Black commencement on college campuses?
No, I do not. It is important that we understand that Harvard is arguably the most select institution of higher education in the world. And symbolically, this is putting the imprimatur of separatism on graduation ceremonies, and I think it's a serious mistake.
What about students who say that this type of ceremony, you've heard Kristen and Courtney and Professor Jackson here saying that these ceremonies are an acknowledgement of the struggle, of the resilience of them and of their communities, and that, you know, that this is an opportunity to celebrate that, to celebrate the accomplishments of this community?
I can appreciate that, but once Harvard puts its imprimatur on it, that takes on a different tone, and I think that is a serious, serious mistake. in the overall society. You know, we have to remember that higher education is sort of a compact between the community at large, the students, faculty, and everybody else. And public opinion is very important. And I think that in this case, the public at large would resoundingly disassociate themselves from this kind of an event. If students want to do it on their own, that's one thing. But once Harvard blesses it, that's something else altogether.
What about the sociological research that Professor Jackson cites that suggests that Black students need to be supported, and that this is one way to validate African-American students and other traditionally underrepresented groups for that matter, Mr. Connolly?
I think all students need to be supported, and I think that the best way to support Black students is to abandon these sort of practices. Yes, Black graduation is lower. I saw that as a regent, and my conclusion is just the opposite of what this so-called sociological research concludes. Black people were not separated by language, were not even separated by, quote, culture. We're separated by skin color. And the reason for, in many cases, it's not even skin color. And if we want to have a civil society, we have to abandon these kind of separate practices.
Professor Jackson, jump in here.
Yeah, I mean, I think to Mr. Connerly's point about the compact of higher education, you know, I agree that there is a compact in society. And I think the ideal, of course, the ideal for all of us is that the mainstream sort of institutional conventions of universities reflect all the students and the values and experiences of all the students. And one of the reasons that there is a demand for these sort of additional, again, they're not separate, they're not in replace of, but additional celebrations is because despite the best efforts of the law, right, and sort of other attempts to include everyone, the mainstream traditions of the institutions continue to be exactly that. They continue to reflect the sort of histories of whiteness, of centering white experience at these institutions. And so until we see sort of the same types of validation that can be taken place at a Black graduation, for example, in the mainstream graduation, there's always going to be a feeling within the students that their experiences aren't being addressed.
Mr. Connolly, would you respond?
I can appreciate that perspective, but I shall not be moved from my belief that we need to promote integration and show how students of all races, in quote, and backgrounds can come together as one. And the place to do that, I mean, there is really no other place than when they've reached the point of graduating from college, from a grueling 4 to 6 years of study, mingling with students of different backgrounds. Let's accentuate that experience rather than separating our students along lines of skin color.
Professor.
Yeah,
it
does not take us
to the point of being one society. It goes in the opposite direction.
So, Mr. Connolly, to your mind, what else could schools do or should schools do to support students of diverse backgrounds, if not these sorts of commencement celebrations?
I think that once the student comes on the campus, the schools can do much more to show that this is a welcoming environment for all students, regardless of their race, regardless of their sexual orientation or whatever. Schools can do more in that regard, but I think to carve out skin color and say we're going to put our voice and our support behind celebrations or ceremonies for Black students. Even though it's not for Black students only, the symbolism of this is horrendous. I mean, this is, go on Facebook or go on any kind of a venue and see how the public is largely reacting to this.
Well, with all due respect to Mr. Connolly, the way that people react to this on Facebook isn't data. It's not what the social science says, and it's not what we know will create success among students who we know from the data that Black students have a particularly hard time in educations of higher institutions, particularly at predominantly white institutions, and have even a hard time afterward because of social inequality.
Ward Connolly, I do appreciate your time today. Joining us from Lake Arrowhead, California, president of the American Civil Rights Institute, former University of California regent. Thank you very much, Mr. Connolly. Really appreciate it.
Glad to be with you.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. Black graduate students at Harvard University got a lot of attention when they announced they were holding Black Commencement 2017 in addition to University Commencement for everybody. We're talking about that today, and you can join the conversation. In this multicultural nation, do we need to be open to different ways of celebrating achievement? Is that one of those ways? Great panel in the studio today. We're speaking with Kristen Turner and Courtney Woods, two of the Harvard student organizers of this event. We're also joined by Sarah Jackson, Assistant Professor of Communication Studies at Northeastern University. On April 27th, Georgetown University held a lavender graduation for LGBTQ students. Senior Speaker Luke Brown said the LGBT students continually have to deal with challenges about the way they conduct themselves.
Silence is familiar to queer folk. I myself am all too acquainted with the unspoken questions regarding the way we talk, the way we walk, the way we present ourselves.
And at the University of Washington, La Raza graduation is held in honor of the accomplishments of students who identify as Latino. Here's gender studies professor Michelle Habel Payan addressing graduates at the event in 2015.
I'd like you to take this quote to heart. Mucha gente pequeña en lugares pequeños haciendo cosas pequeñas pueden cambiar el mundo. And this is reiterating what other students have said today. Many small people in small places doing small things can change the world. This is a quote from Eduardo Galeano.
Let's go to the phones here first. Kate is in East Hampton, Connecticut. Hi, Kate. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you.
You bet. Go ahead.
I participated in an African-American student celebration in the 70s when I graduated from Oberlin College, and it was one of the most important parts of the commencement weekend for me.
What did it do for you? Why was it good for you?
It was important to me because it was my fellow classmates recognizing me, and so it was very personal. And you know, I was not 4.0, I was not summa cum laude, I was not student trustee.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a way for me to feel very connected to my graduation in a way that the actual commencement ceremony did not do.
Kate, thank you very much. Here's David in Guilford, Connecticut. Hi, David, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You bet.
I tend to agree mostly with your guests, but I do have to say that I think, you know, while I acknowledge there's a problem, I think that, you know, this notion that Black students need to be supported as if they're, you know, these little children who, you know, it's a kind of offensive, to be frank. And I think that, you know, yes, there's a problem, but perpetuating it is not going to solve it. The minute that we decide that, you know, okay, we've got to cave into this societal idea of separateness and start catering to it, it does no good. And I'll set my response off there. Also, I would say that I think having at least one dissenting opinion on your panel would be helpful. Thank you very much.
David, thank you very much. We had Ward Connolly on, who certainly was a dissenting voice. Kristen Turner, Courtney Woods, I mean, there's David saying separateness is offensive. You heard Ward Connolly, mm-hmm. former University of California regent, before the break, saying, you know, we should abandon these practices. Do you say?
I mean, I definitely think it's important to note because these exercises in no way, shape, or form are an illustration of victimhood. If anything, they're the exact opposite. I think that's why we were very deliberate about the language, about claiming our identity, you know, making space for ourselves, carving it out. They're action items per se. And I also want to push back really quickly about the idea of this, you know, separatist movement. I don't think that has been a piece of, you know, any of this throughout the lifespan of the idea itself. I think you, along societal lines, you see different organizations that are coalitions. You know, you see the NAACP, you see the Urban League, you see Congressional Black Caucus, you know, that are essentially legitimized by the larger societies being interesting, compelling, and important. And I think what it does is it allows people to community build in an effort to best aggregate interest needs of a small but substantial group. Mm-hmm.
Courtney, I'm curious, as an African-American student, how you have reshaped Harvard as an institution?
Well, I think that the commencement is an example of that, right? This is a new legacy that we're leaving as Black students to change, to reclaim and reshape the institutional foundation of Harvard. The Office of the President has been very supportive in this initiative, and there's been a lot of university-wide initiatives to support students in their individual and particular and specific needs. I also want to clarify, you know, we don't live in a post-racial society. We don't live in a colorblind society. It is a privilege to escape race. I carry my Blackness with me in every hall of Harvard. I carry my Blackness in class. I carry my Blackness in every interaction I have with any professor. And so the idea is that this space, this commencement, is a space where I can celebrate my Blackness and not defend it against stereotypes, not defend it against misrepresentations, but rather just live in it and celebrate it for what it is.
And I also say, you know, make no mistake, like, we're graduating. You know, my colleagues and my peers represent this really fantastic human capital, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, who have accomplished really great things despite significant headwind. And so that's the part that we're really noticing. And that's the part that we want to focus on. We're not victims at all.
Not in the slightest.
Professor Jackson, is there a generational shift here? I hear these very articulate voices, Kristen and Courtney, and I think in the time of Black Lives Matter and these other sort of social movements, are millennials more confident, more bold in their identities, if you will, that maybe their parents didn't or couldn't be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I'm sitting here just kind of grinning ear to ear as an educator, listening to Kristen and Courtney be so articulate about these ideas, and I think yes and no around the generational stuff. I mean, one, there is a long tradition of Black student activism on campus to demand things, for example, like ethnic studies classes, like Black student unions, like Black graduations. And you could say that as well for example, LGBTQ students, Latina
students, Native American.
Yeah, absolutely.
First generation,
right? So you can go back to the 60s and trace, for example, Native American students demanding that indigenous writers get incorporated into curriculum and in English departments. So it's not necessarily that this student activism or that these ideas around wanting to see themselves represented and wanting to really be included is new. But I think what we do see in terms of some of the generational divide, and I think we heard this a little bit from Mr. Connolly, is there was this idea among some people, not everyone, but some people, I think, post-civil rights movement, that assimilation was the way to fix racism, that if everybody could just assimilate into the same culture, the same ideas, that would solve things. But of course, what we know because of social science research is that was impossible. There were groups of people who it wasn't allowed for them to assimilate. No matter how hard they tried to be just like whatever was mainstream, they were still victims of hate crimes, of micro and macro aggressions, of exclusionary practices, of implicit and explicit bias. And so I think what a lot of students particularly have responded to that with is advocacy. And that's what we see is that, and again, you know, there's some actually great, really psychology research that shows that students of color, LGBTQ students, immigrant students who engage in advocacy while they're in university have higher graduation rates and higher success rates than those that feel the pressure to simply assimilate and sort of keep their mouths shut. Advocacy actually empowers young people.
100%. 100%. And I would also like to add, a lot of the groups, the affinity coalitions that have their separate organization, separate commencements, it's often because the work that they do throughout the year to support the larger student body in terms of receiving students during Admitted Students Weekends, reaching out as liaisons, things like that actually help the institution to run. And so as such, those subsets are already used to having to operate in an inherently different way than the larger student body population. And I think the administration recognizes that. And as such, they want to be able to, you know, give them a forum to honor a lot of their unique efforts.
Let's get Eric in here from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. I'm a white, cisgendered, hetero male, and I walk around all day, every day in spaces that were made by people like me, for people like me to feel safe. We control the power. We control the narrative. And I think it's absolutely wonderful that these guys have this this opportunity to say, okay, listen, this is the additional struggle that we've had to go through to be a student at Harvard. You know, I think it's interesting, the silly old question, why is there black entertainment television? Why can't there be white entertainment television? Well, all television was set up to be white entertainment television. So I just think it's really great to recognize the power dynamic at work here.
Thanks for your perspective, Eric. I appreciate it. Here's Terry in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Terry. You're on the air. Welcome. Hello, Terry. Go ahead.
Yes. Okay, listen. I am an African-American graduate of an all-white college in Iowa in 1974. And we fought to have a black student union and other support groups on this campus for African-American students because there needs to be that kind of support. You know, when I see movies like Hidden Faces, you know, I see that things have not changed that much, and African-Americans still have a certain kind of an experience that is not being reflected in, you know, overall general society. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to be able to support African-American students and other minority students with these kind of graduation ceremonies because of our unique experience.
Mm-hmm. Terry, thank you. Thank you very much. Professor Jackson, let me turn to you on a couple of points because we've talked about the experience within the college years. And I want to ask you about the racial disparity that happens after graduation. A study from the Brookings Institution shows that the gap in debt between black and white graduates more than triples mm-hmm. within just a few short years after college. That's one of many examples of mm-hmm. the sort of economic disparity that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, I think these studies are a really good check on our sort of idealism that education is an equalizer, or that once people go into this college environment that they're in this sort of multicultural melting pot where everyone is the same. We know that we continue to live in a society where sort of the historical structures of things like redlining, things like economic discrimination continue to affect these black students even after graduation. So, for example, black graduate students have to take out much more loan money than white graduate students because white graduate students tend to have more family wealth accumulated and thus often are receiving more help from their families than students of color are. And the result is then when those students graduate, let's say they both have degrees from Harvard Business School and they both have high earning capacity, but that black student might and most often does have more debt and will have a harder time sort of making the most of that earning capacity because the ways in which those sort of economic inequalities continue to affect them even post-graduation. So, yeah, I mean, absolutely, you know, we need to be cautious about even as, you know, these students acknowledge that being graduate students at Harvard is a great privilege, and it certainly is. It's a privilege that the vast majority of people will never have, right? But that doesn't take away the ways in which sort of, you know, these historical structures continue to impact them during their educations and after.
Courtney Woods, you hear what Professor Jackson is saying. I'm curious how that strikes you. You told us earlier that you feel like you're an anchor of an entire community back home, and I'm curious what you think of when you hear that.
I think Professor Jackson is exactly right. One of the reasons that we as organizers decided to have this commencement celebration is that Harvard mostly operates in silos. So individual schools, many of us don't know each other across the river. And so this was an opportunity to have a university-wide celebration where black students could create coalitions of now emerging professionals and have that professional network when we graduate.
But when you leave and you're looking 10 years down the road and you hear what Professor Jackson says in the statistics, right, that are cited here, you know, what goes through your mind?
The very real reality that I live in, where many of us as Black students graduating from Harvard feel that we have an obligation to serve our communities and feel that no matter what our professional decisions are, we have to in some way give back to our community.
And in some regard, Kristen Turner, I mean, you talk about being a strong voice at an institution that does have a complicated history with African Americans and with slavery, for that matter.
Most definitely. You know, last year at the law school, at least, we removed our crest, which had ties to a slave owner, et cetera. I think that university-wide, they're working on the task force for diversity and inclusion. And I think that especially to the economic point, there are different planes that students are actually existing on depending on where you're coming from. I think that especially coming out of an institution like Harvard, the currency is different. You know, money isn't really the limiting commodity. Instead, you're talking about autonomy. And so, you know, for us to still have to kind of be tethered to financial considerations in a different way than the rest of our peers automatically kind of bifurcates the pool a little bit in a way that is impactful. And I think it's a way that we often try to recognize amongst ourselves because it's very easy for it to go unspoken.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about advocacy. We've talked about assimilation. We've talked about a lot of things this hour. I'm curious, from your perspective, Kristen Turner, Courtney Woods, what could schools do to support students better, support students who have different backgrounds?
I personally think this is more of an infrastructural issue. I think it's more process oriented. I think that the way that we even approach diversity and inclusion is still top down. I think that the benefit of going to an institution is that you have this beautiful pool of intellectual capital. And I think that the wave of entrepreneurial kind of inclinations within our peer group is something to be harnessed. And I think it could really be harnessed for good. So I think that if institutions really want to take in the best talent, they should actually listen to that talent. They're trying to teach and curate people how to use their voices, listen to those voices, because that will ultimately help you segue into the next generation.
Professor Jackson, top down or bottom out?
I'm an advocate for student activists. You know, I mean, I teach social movements and this is sort of what I study. So, of course, I think that institutions should be listening to the young people, especially because so many of the structures of these institutions are designed in when I say old ways, I don't just mean, you know, 40 years ago. I mean, a university like Harvard, the way it's structurally organized is hundreds of years old. Right. And the times are different. Right. And of course, students have important input to how things might change to be more inclusive.
Last 30 seconds here. Courtney Woods, Kristen Turner.
If I may, I would say, you know, coming from a program like True Student Support Services, which is a federally funded program for low-income first-generation students, it is very important to have free academic tutoring, financial literacy trainings, social capital dialogues. I think that the university at Harvard has done a really great job at having listening sessions where they've actually brought administrators to students of color and said, what are your issues? What are your day-to-day experiences? And how can we help you?
What an important conversation. I so appreciate you coming in. I appreciate everything about it. Thank you very much. Kristen Turner, Courtney Woods, student organizers of Black Commencement 2017, and Sarah Jackson, assistant professor of communication studies at Northeastern. Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you for having us. Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.